Hey, welcome to another episode of the Learn to Code with Me podcast. I'm your host, Laurence Bradford, and today's episode is all about someone who started off pursuing a professional career as a ballerina and now works in front-end engineering. All that is coming up after a quick word about this season's wonderful sponsor. Linode is a cloud hosting provider built both by and for developers. They make it super easy and affordable to host your app, website, or service on the cloud. Linode is independently owned and founded on a love for Linux, open source technologies, and the community that surrounds them. If it runs on Linux, it runs on Linode. Even better, as a Learn to Code with Me listener, you can get $100 in free credit when you create a new account with Linode. To claim your $100, just go to linode.com/learn-to-code. That's all one word. Happy coding. And we're back. In today's episode, I talk with Kara Luton. Kara is a software engineer currently working as a UX engineer at CrowdStrike, a cybersecurity company. I wanted to reach out to Kara because she has a very unique background, and the path that she took to get into tech is anything but ordinary. She pursued a career as a professional ballerina until the age of 18. She then switched to music publicity for several years and now works as a UX engineer. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. How Kara went from ballerina to front-end engineer, how her athletic training has helped her in her tech career, and how to spin skills and experiences from previous careers to land a job that you don't have a traditional background in. Our conversation also touches on the importance of networking and what it's like to work as a UX engineer. If you want to make the switch into tech from a completely unrelated field, then this episode is for you. Enjoy. Hey, Kara, thank you so much for coming on the show. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me.
Yes, of course. So where are you located right now?
So right now I am right outside of Nashville, Tennessee.
Oh, okay. Awesome. Have you been living there for a while?
Yeah, I pretty much say that I'm a Nashville native because I've lived here the longest. My family was in the military, so I kind of moved around a lot, but Nashville is really home for me.
Okay, awesome. Well, I just like to give listeners like a sense of like where you're coming from and all of that. But I just want to dive right into everything. Could you tell me a bit about your background and what you were doing before you got into tech?
Oh, gosh. So I got into tech about 5 or 6 years ago. I went to a boot camp. But before that, I was working as a music publicist here in Nashville. And gosh, before that, I was pursuing a career as a professional ballerina. So I did ballet my entire life. I was really passionate about it, especially in high school. And my senior year of high school, I had the opportunity to move to New York City on my own, do high school online, and I was a trainee with the Joffrey Ballet School, which is kind of like one of the first steps in becoming a professional. And I really loved what I was doing. I mean, it was amazing being 17, living on my own in New York City, but I'd always known I wanted to go to college. So when I had to decide what I really wanted to major in college, if I wanted to major in ballet or if I wanted to major in something else, I kind of decided, you know what, I'm going to drop ballet for now. I wasn't as passionate about it. I was getting injured all the time. And honestly, it's just not a great environment to be in. It's very competitive. So I was like, you know what, I'm going to move back home to Nashville. I enrolled for my freshman year at Belmont University, and I was a public relations major. And the reason I chose that was honestly because of The Hills with like Lauren Conrad. She made it seem like super cool. And originally I wanted nothing to do with the music business, but obviously being in Nashville and Belmont is a school that's really known for their music business program, I got drawn into it. So I was really lucky to land a job in the music industry right out of college. It was everything I'd worked for towards college because I'd done a bunch of internships and this was my big goal. So I was really kind of living out my dreams after I graduated. But I did that for several years and I was getting burnt out really quickly. And that's when I was sitting there to myself one day and I was like, I need to find something else. Either I do kind of normal PR or something outside of music, or I needed to find something else. And I actually stumbled upon Codecademy and started teaching myself HTML and CSS. And I was like, oh, this is a lot of fun. I started, you know, I'm a very type A person. So I was like researching everything and reaching out to people, doing coffee meetings, and kind of learned that it seemed like a pretty cool job. And because of my time at Joffrey when I was doing online high school, I knew that really teaching myself was not an option for me. And I didn't want to go back to school because I already had so many school loans. So I found a boot camp and enrolled in that. And now I've been in tech ever since.
Wow. Well, great story. Very like concise, like, yeah, awesome story. No, you did such a good job delivering that. Oh my gosh. Okay. So I definitely have a lot of things I want to go back on and ask you about. The first though, I think is just like being a ballerina and what that was like. So before I invited you to come on the show, I was thinking we never had anyone, I think, on the podcast that was like a professional athlete that I know of. And I consider, you know, being a ballerina and doing that like full time your senior year to be like basically a professional athlete. Is there anything from your time of being a ballerina that you see, like from your ballerina training, that you see helping you today in your tech career?
Oh my gosh, there are so many things from doing ballet that I use daily in my tech career. Kind of the first one is just always practicing and never giving up. You know, ballet is so meticulous. The littlest of things come into detail and you got to keep practicing over and over again. Even when you are a professional and you're in a company, you're not just doing these ballets every single day. You're taking your technique classes, kind of building upon the foundations. And that's something that we do in tech all the time, you know, especially as developers, we're, you know, you don't do a JavaScript tutorial and you're amazing at it overnight, although I wish that was the case. You are always doing these tutorials. You're learning up about the newest things, learning about new languages or technologies, and you're kind of building upon that throughout your career. And that's something I'm really grateful that ballet taught me, is just kind of to keep learning and keep evolving on your talent and never giving up on it. But I think ballet also was really good at teaching me about like paying attention to the little details, which is something I talk about a lot. For people that are new to tech, is there's so many small details and you can get frustrated. There's been so many times where I get frustrated because I've either misspelled something and I've overlooked it or forgotten a semicolon, like the, you know, the traditional error when it comes to programming. And taking steps, you know, when I was doing ballet, if I was having trouble with a move, I would break it down little move by little move, because each move kind of builds upon itself. And it's the same thing with code. Like if I'm stuck, I'll comment everything out and break it down line by line and make sure, try to dive in and see what's wrong. So when I took a step back and kind of compared ballet and code, I was amazed to see it, like how much they had in common, really. And two things that you would never think would be similar in any way.
Yeah, I've interviewed a lot of people on the show before who've worked in other creative professions, maybe not like physical so much, but like music and art and whatnot. And especially with music, I feel like there are a lot of similarities. I'm not a musical person, but from the people that I've spoken to who can read music, play music, they always said it, like that there were a lot of parallels between the two things, like writing code, writing music. And I always thought that was really interesting. But are you still dancing today, like in any way?
No, I'm not. I wish I was, you know. Kind of at the height of the pandemic, I took advantage of it and I was doing some ballet classes over Zoom from home. And it was really nice doing that. But my problem with ballet doing it now is, one, classes are very long. They're like an hour and a half. So to take that time out of my day, it's a lot. But also, I just remember being able to do all of this stuff in ballet, like being able to lift my leg all the way up and being able to do these complex moves. And now, I mean, I'm not that old. I'm in my late 20s, but I can't do that stuff anymore because I haven't done ballet in a long time. So it kind of makes me sad when I do it. I've looked into, I think I want to take up tap dancing because I used to do that when I was a kid, but I wasn't that good at it. So it's like now if I did it, it's not, I don't have to compare myself to how I was because I was never that good at it.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. So I was thinking, don't a lot of ballerinas retire really young, right? Like they only...
Yeah, they do. So ballet is a pretty short-lived career. Like you're lucky if you get into like your mid-30s and you're still doing it.
Yeah. One of the most common questions I feel like I get asked is, am I too old to transition into tech? You know, if someone's in like their 30s or 40s or 50s even. And I feel like the answer is no. It's just, you know, how hard will you work, you know, your mm-hmm. dedication, your learning. But I feel like with some things like being a ballerina, if you're in your 50s, you know, it's kind of you could do it recreationally, but the chances of being a professional ballerina or really with any like professional athletic endeavor, it's kind of not really possible.
Yeah, it's crazy how young ballerinas start training. I mean, I think I was around 4 or 5. A lot of girls around that age. For boys, it's a little bit older. Like you can honestly be like 10 and start doing it. But yeah, it's definitely a lifelong endeavor. If you want to get into it professionally, you can definitely always start it recreationally at any age. It's a great workout too.
Yeah, they have ballet classes on the mirror. I have one of the workout things, yeah. The mirror. I've never done one. I do some of their other dance classes, not ballet though, but maybe I'll try it one day. I just like things a little more fast paced, and I've mm-hmm. started a few and it seemed a lot slower. But anyway, I don't want to talk too much about doing dance as a workout. I would love to hear more about your experience working in PR and music, because I also feel like that must have the skills you gained and things that you did there must help you out today in tech as well, right?
Yeah, of course they do. So my time as a music publicist, like I said, I worked all towards college for it. I started interning the summer after my freshman year and really interned every semester to be able to get that job in the music industry because, you know, PR is really competitive itself. And then when you want to do a niche like music industry PR, it's even smaller. So especially getting that kind of assistant entry level role was really difficult to come by. So I was really grateful that I got that role pretty quickly out of college. But the biggest thing I thank PR for is, one, my writing skills. Because as developers, you know, we're not just writing code every single day. We're kind of explaining that code, writing documentation, all of that. So I'm really grateful that PR kind of honed my writing skills and made them more impressive than they were when I was in college. But the second thing really is it got me out of my shell, you know. Especially before college, I'm still an introvert, but I was very shy. And throughout my time in college, I kind of got more out of my shell. But PR really kind of busted that open for me because I had to go and network with so many people and just say, hey, you don't know me, but I'm Kara. I represent X and Y artist. You're a journalist. Love to go get coffee with you. And a lot of times these people were a lot older than I was because I was in my early 20s doing this. So it's like I had to kind of relate to these people and get on their level. And that was something that was extremely uncomfortable for me. But now, especially because I'm really big into promoting, especially getting more women into tech and showing them that they can do this, I feel like that's really helped me put myself out there and show them like, hey, I'm doing this and I'm from a really weird career path, but now you can too. And I really thank PR for that, for kind of pushing me and getting me out of my shell.
Yeah, definitely. So you mentioned how you started learning with Code Academy, but then you ultimately decided to go to a coding bootcamp. Mm-hmm. What year was this? Like, how long ago was that?
I went to my bootcamp I started in September of 2016. So it was kind of around the start where bootcamps still really weren't a huge thing. It was kind of, I remember interviewing and people were still very weary of bootcamp grads and kind of what their capabilities would be.
Gotcha. So how long between like starting to learn Code Academy and then deciding to go to a boot camp was it? Like, were you noodling around for a few months or was it a couple of years? Like, so I feel like once you decide to go to a coding boot camp and commit to that, I imagine it was probably a few months, right? Like 3 months or so. It's a pretty big decision, right? Usually full time. There's obviously the pay for it. There's a financial side. Mm-hmm. Like, how long did it take you to know? And was there something that kind of like clicked where you're like, okay, I have to do this or I'm going to do this?
So I normally am very like very type A. I look into every single thing I do, research it, make sure it's the right path. But for some reason with coding, once I started on Code Academy and I started teaching myself HTML and CSS, I was like, yeah, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to start looking into it. And I'm lucky that I have a cousin who also works in tech. He's a developer as well. So I reached out to him and was like, hey, is there anybody I can talk to? Or if you want to chat, can I talk to you about this, kind of what the day-to-day is like? So I did dive in during that. But I would say the process of starting Code Academy and then actually enrolling in my bootcamp was probably like 4 months. Yeah, it was kind of mostly, it was once I figured out I liked coding, it was making sure the bootcamp was the right one for me and kind of talking to people that had already gone through the bootcamp and making sure, you know, this is going to be a worthy investment because it is a lot of money. And I quit my full-time job that I worked for so hard during college to do something completely different. And I'm thankful my parents and he was my boyfriend at the time, but now my husband, was so supportive of everything. We were actually talking about it the other day. My parents were laughing how when I came to them, I was like, hey, by the way, I'm quitting my job. I'm going to go to this coding boot camp. And they were like, what? But I'm thankful that they knew I had it in me to get through it and to land a successful career.
Yeah, I feel like it's obviously super important to have a strong like community and support network around you in life in general, and especially during mm-hmm. big transitions, right? So at the coding bootcamp, what technologies and skills were you taught?
Yeah, so I went to the Iron Yard, which sadly isn't around anymore, but it was a 12-week program. And unlike some other boot camps, you exclusively focus on either front end or back end. So I focused on front end. So we learned HTML, CSS. We started with just, you know, plain old vanilla JavaScript. And then we jumped into different frameworks. So I learned Vue, and I actually learned Ember as well, which is what I use at my current job, which is really funny that I learned it so many years ago, and now here I am jumping into it again. It was really cool to just kind of see the progression it's made between the time that I started, because it was still early on, and then where it's at now.
And I think you said this, but if you can remind me, how long was the bootcamp for?
It was for 12 weeks.
Okay, perfect. And then after the coding bootcamp wrapped up, how long did it take you to get your first full-time job or client if you freelanced first or, you know, what have you?
Yeah. So after ending the bootcamp, it ended in December 2016, and then we kind of had our demo day in January just because of the holidays. So I was still going to their location a lot, just kind of working on side projects here and there, putting together my portfolio. But I got my first full-time job in May of 2017. So it took about 5 months for me from the time of ending my bootcamp to actually getting that first full-time job. And I wasn't picky with where I was applying, because obviously I wanted to get my name out there and talk to as many different companies as I could. But I was really particular with offers I got, because I did get a couple offers before accepting where I did. And it was mostly because when I was interviewing, boot camps were still a new thing. So I was trying to leverage being like, hey, you know, I come from this PR background, my ballet background, that have so much to add to what I can do for you. So a lot of places were like, okay, that's cool. You can do a hybrid developer and public relations role. And they'd offer me a job. And I was like, that's not why I went to this boot camp. I'm getting rid of PR. So I was really picky about where I finally ended up. But the company I ended up at was a small advertising agency here in town in Nashville, and it was a great first job. I was really thankful that I ended up there.
I've never heard of something like that, like a hybrid PR and developer. Were these at like really small companies or agencies or something?
Yeah, it was really small agencies. I think kind of the way it came about was I had met this woman at a local meetup, and she was super nice, and we just got to chatting, and she was like, hey, I'll send your resume out. And she sent it to a marketing group, because obviously sometimes marketing agencies are going to be hiring developers. But once they heard that I had that PR background too, they were like, okay, let's make this a hybrid role and you can do both. And I was like, no, we're not doing that.
Yeah, yeah. I can't really envision. I feel like it would be hard to have that be a hybrid role, because it feels like they're two very, you know, different, separate sort of things.
Oh, yeah. It'd be so much context switching. It would be impossible.
Yeah, it feels like that would be a good way to, you know, burn out or something, right? Like all the, as you just said, context switching, that could be challenging for sure. So when you were doing your job hunt during those few months, aside from just applying to jobs and like sending out resumes, what were some other like important things that you think you did during that time that helped you get to where you are today?
Going to meetups was probably the biggest one, you know, just saying, hey, I'm Kara, I'm looking for a job. If you have any leads, like, let me know. Like I said, I just sat down at a table one day and started talking to someone, and she sent out my resume to a lot of people. And, you know, it did end up leading somewhere, which is really nice. So you never know who you're going to meet. The other thing I did during my job search was, even though there are a lot of tech jobs out there that need people to be interviewing and to hire, you know, a lot of people are applying for those same roles. So one thing PR kind of taught me, especially when I was reaching out to journalists, because these journalists I would email when I was a publicist would be getting literally thousands of emails a day, and I somehow had to stick out for them to open my email and say, hey, I want to interview your client. So when I was applying for these jobs, I actually put together a very, looking back, they probably look terrible, but it was a custom HTML and CSS email template. So it would have like my name, a little bit about me, some projects I did at my boot camp, and I would do it all with like the company's logo and their brand colors. And a lot of times when I'd go to these interviews and I'd be like, so why did you pick me out of like the stack of applicants to interview, which is a great interview question to ask, they would say, you know, it was because of that email. Like, I'd never seen anything like that. It stood out to me. I wanted to kind of get to know you more. So I think that was the biggest thing, is meetups and then trying to stand out in some way against all these other applicants.
Oh, yeah. I love that with the email. I don't think I've heard of anyone in the past that I've interviewed or just in general who's done something quite like that. But I know people who would build like a custom website landing page, mm-hmm. maybe with their resume or something like that on it, but just for that specific job that they were applying to. Curious, how long would it take you to like do one of those emails, like for a specific company?
You know, once I got the template down, because after I did the initial building of it out, and I had to learn about email templates because they're a lot different than just like normal coding, once I got it done, the template done, it was pretty easy to switch out when I was applying different places, because I just changed like the color, the background color of the email and the logo, kind of changed a couple of text things. But I think it took me probably like a day or two to build out. And that was mostly because I had to figure out, I found a tutorial online that actually showed me how to do the email templates, and that's what I went off of. And then it was kind of like messing with it to make sure it looked okay on different screens. And like I said, looking back, it's not the most advanced or beautiful thing, but it got the job done.
Yeah, well, I'm not by any means an expert in like HTML, CSS, and emails, but I know, from what I know, it's very difficult, and it's not like normal HTML and CSS. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's really challenging. And then I remember just with my last job, because I would sometimes help with things related to this, it could look so different on different devices. Mm-hmm. And you would have to like do all this testing because like maybe this button looks good on, you know, Gmail on my phone, but then you open it up in another email application and it just looks like a disaster. So I remember it being very tedious. So I could definitely see that taking some time, like a day or two, just to figure it all out and get something working. Heck, even longer than that, honestly.
Yeah.
Because it's not an easy thing. But I feel like, aren't there jobs? I mean, maybe you don't know this, but I feel like, aren't there, there's jobs that are just like an email developer or an email designer, right?
Yeah, there are. I've met a couple, I run a local women programmers meetup, and there are some women who do just email development, and that's all they do. And I'm like, you have a tough job, because like you said, email development is so different. Like, I think it's all inline CSS and things like, I don't think Flexbox or CSS Grid or anything like that works with it. So it's really trying to go back in to the basics and kind of figure out what will look good on each thing. And like I said, I'm sure there's some people opened up my email and they couldn't read it and they're like, what is this? But at least it worked for some.
Yeah. And also thinking about like in emails, like accessibility. And then I know there's things that if you do it like in the email body, it can trigger like a spam filters or something.
Mm-hmm.
So you also have to be like aware of that. Not because you obviously, if you're sending an email for a company, you don't want it going to a person's spam folder because they won't see it. So yeah, it's definitely a lot of different things to think about. And there really aren't that many courses on it though. Did you say you found a course or a tutorial that taught you?
Yeah, I found a tutorial online. I think it was, I can't remember if it was on Medium or something like that, but I think I just Googled, you know, email templates, HTML, and basically just followed that and tried to make mine as simple as possible.
Gotcha. Okay, we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsor, but when we get back, we're going to talk more about Kara's career and what she's doing today. Have you heard of cloud hosting, but you're not entirely sure what it is or if it's something you should be using? Let me bring you up to speed. Instead of hosting your website or app on just one machine, when you host in the cloud, your data is spread across lots of interconnected servers. This is great because if your website is hosted on just one machine, like it is with regular hosting, and that machine goes down, your site goes offline. But if your site is hosted in the cloud and one of the servers goes down, the others can pick up the slack and your site stays up. The servers can also adapt to accommodate any changes in traffic, so you don't have to worry about bandwidth limitations. And you only pay for the resources that you use. Linode was one of the first companies to offer cloud computing, 3 years before AWS arrived on the scene. and their cloud hosting packages start at just $5 a month. And as a Learn to Code with Me listener, you'll get $100 in credit. Build your next project in the cloud by going to linode.com/learntocode. Okay, and we're back. So, Kara, I wanted to talk a bit more just about your job search and standing out in applications and interviews and all of that. And I was curious, since you do have this non-traditional background, you know, you don't have a computer science degree or information science or one of these, you know, tech degrees. And at the time, as you said already, coding boot camps were not brand new, but, you know, in 2016 versus 2021, there are a lot more, I think a lot more people know about them today, especially employers. Was that ever a challenge, like not having a computer science degree with some of the jobs that you were interviewing at?
Oh my gosh, coming from a boot camp and not having that CS degree was a huge challenge. So I remember one of my job interviews, I had gone through like five stages of an interview. Like it was, they had me do like a personality test, and then it was kind of the initial getting to know you interview, and then a technical interview and a take-home project. And I remember I did the take-home project and I thought I did really well on it. And I did the review and all sounded like I did a good job and I was really excited. And then I got an email and it was like, hey, we're so sorry, but we're going with a different candidate. And I was really shocked. So I reached out, and this is something I definitely recommend anybody doing in job interviews, reach out and ask for feedback because you want to grow from those interviews. They're a learning process. So I asked for feedback and they said, you know, you did actually the best on the take-home test than any of our other clients, but you're too green. And I was like, what? So they declined me the job because this would be my first job in tech. And I was just so shocked because, you know, they said I did the best on the take-home project. So why aren't I the one that is being hired? So it was a really big stigma against boot camps at that time. And, you know, I still think that stigma exists. And those companies, looking back, I'm so glad I didn't get that job because I don't want to work somewhere where they say, oh, you don't have a computer science degree, or you don't have this tech degree, you're not as good as the other people. Because I honestly think people from non-traditional backgrounds bring such a diverse point of view to your company, and they're just going to make your product better because they come from those different backgrounds. They're not just computer science minded. They honestly are taking the point of view of some of your customers that are using it. So they really can bring a new point of view. And I think really, I mean, obviously, I wish I had gotten a computer science degree. I wish I had started this career earlier. But I'm so grateful for the path I took, because if I hadn't done ballet and if I hadn't done PR, I wouldn't be where I am today with kind of a stronger, what people always call soft skills. And I'm really grateful for that.
Yeah. So on your resume or in the job applications, cover letter, whatever, did you talk about like being a ballerina and then working in public relations?
I think at the time I was mostly focusing on PR, since that's kind of like the real job experience that I had. You know, I didn't talk about ballet a lot until I was taking a step back, and I did a talk at Underground JS, which is a conference here in Nashville, Tennessee. And I did this, gosh, back in 2019, where I was talking about my career transition, and I was stepping back and I was like, oh, ballet has a lot in common with PR. So I kind of, or gosh, not PR, with developing. So I wish I had kind of taken that step back and shown it. But kind of the big point of view I took was showing how similar PR and development really are. And I was like, hey, you know, I learned how to code in 3 months. Like, imagine what I could do in 3 months at your company. And that's kind of how I positioned it, is I've learned so much and so fast. And really the whole point of a bootcamp is, yes, to learn how to code, but also kind of how to teach yourself, because that's honestly the number one skill developers need to have, is how to teach themselves and continue learning.
Oh yeah, 100%. So you would like reference experience with being in public relations as like learning a lot in a short time, not so much the ballet.
Yeah. And I kind of wish I would have referenced ballet more, because, you know, there is so much in common. Like I said, the paying attention to little details, always being able to learn. But yeah, I really, and especially when I went into interviews, I always knew they were going to ask me about my career transition. It's something if I was doing job interviews now, I know I'd still get asked about it, because it is still a little uncommon. But, you know, I would really try to weave a story into it. And that's another thing that PR taught me is I was always coaching people how to do these interviews, my clients. So I kind of got good at doing interviews myself and kind of knowing what they're going to ask ahead of time, knowing they're going to ask about my career transitions and kind of you normally that first question like, oh, tell me a little bit about yourself. I'm giving them a little bit of details, but then I'm also saying, you know, this is why I decided to learn how to code. This is why I'm passionate about it. And that's kind of like the points I continue to hit on throughout the interview.
Oh, yeah. I love that tip about weaving stories into it. So like before interviews that you would have, would you practice like telling the stories in a mirror or did you like plan, I don't know, writing or whatever, like different stories you can tell for different interview questions?
Yeah, I did. So I would kind of sit down before an interview and I do this before any interview and I would write down kind of what I thought they were going to ask. So especially, obviously it's harder during a technical interview and technical interviews I still struggle with, but that initial kind of getting to know you interview, I feel like is where I really excel. And I would sit down and be like, okay, I know they're going to say, tell me a little bit about yourself. Cause that's something first question always is they're going to ask about strengths, the weaknesses. They're going to ask about kind of like a hard time at a job I've had. So I kind of plan those out. And like you said, I'd weave my story into it and talk about my strengths and weaknesses. You know, this is what I learned from PR and how I use it now and kind of all of that. I think for me, I like being prepared ahead of time because it makes you feel even more confident in the interview. And then when you do kind of get asked a question that maybe you weren't as prepared for, you kind of have this backlog of, okay, I can kind of pull a little bit of this question and weave them together and kind of really tell your story throughout it. Because that's what an interview is. They're just wanting to get to know more about you and it's you got to put together your story for them.
Yes. What's that saying? It's like failing to prepare is preparing to fail. Is that
yes.
No, but I 100% agree. I mean, when you go into anything, an interview for a job or, you know, something else that you maybe have some nerves about, I feel like the more preparation you do, the more it eases your nerves, at least for me. And then for me, I feel more confident then going into it because otherwise,
exact same way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Otherwise it's just, yeah, it's kind of like anxiety inducing, but when you practice a lot, yeah, it makes you feel more confident. But how many interviews did you go on before you landed like that initial job, which was at an advertising agency, I believe you said?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I have no idea how many interviews went on. I know that I applied, gosh, probably to over 100 something places. I had the nice thing about going to a boot camp is my boot camp also had career prep for you. So they sat us down and helped us with our resumes, our applications, things like that. And then one of the big things that they really helped with was we made Trello boards when we were there of our job searching process. So we would have different columns for here's job listings I need to apply for. Here's ones I've applied for. Here's where they've reached out. We're in first steps, second steps, and then waiting on like an offer or rejection. And I remember having so many little cards on my Trello board, but it really helped because, you know, when you are applying for that first job, there's so many you apply for, you forget to follow up, things like that. And stuff like that really makes a difference. Just keeping you organized, knowing where you are in each, and you can kind of make little notes like, who did I talk to? Here's the questions they ask. And that really just preps you for future interviews too.
Yeah, I love that. So I used to use, I think, a spreadsheet, but it was in a very similar manner where like mm-hmm. the columns were kind of tracking the status, like the date I applied and did I hear back? Yes, no. Did I move forward? Yes, no. And so on and so forth. Because yeah, when you're applying to so many jobs, it's easy to lose track. And I actually mm-hmm. am really glad you said you applied to so many, like hundreds or whatever it was, because I know there's some folks that I interview that end up getting like their first job really quickly through someone that they know. But I think it's also just as common or even more common for someone like yourself to have to apply to tons and tons of jobs to finally find that right fit. And I'm imagining during this few month period, this was like your full-time job, like applying to jobs was your full-time job, right?
It was. I was really, like I said, really lucky to be able to do the whole bootcamp thing, quitting my full-time job and focusing on learning how to code and then focusing on getting a job. I was really grateful that my boyfriend, husband at the time was really supportive and my parents were really supportive because, you know, it is hard for some people to be able to do that because of the expense. But yeah, looking for a job was my full-time job. I'd wake up every morning, get ready like as if I was going to a job and then I'd be on my computer searching, either applying for new jobs, going to job interviews, anything like that. And I was really grateful when I finally landed that one at the advertising agency.
So did you end up having like any interviews that just really didn't go well at all? Like you kind of bombed. And then if that is the case, like what you learned from it after that happened?
Oh my gosh, yes. Like I said, I struggle with technical interviews just because for those, it's harder to prep. And especially that wasn't something I had to do in my past careers. You know, PR interviews are, you do one, maybe two interviews, and that's, it's basically that getting to know you interview. You're showing kind of pieces that you've gotten written about clients or before, but that's really it. There's no technical aspect of it. So that was really nerve-wracking to me. I remember one job interview, I actually had to delay it because on my way to the first interview I was supposed to go to, I got rear-ended on the highway. So that was interesting because I had to call them and be like, explain what happened. And then I went in the next day and luckily I was fine. My car was a little messed up, but that was it. And I went in the next day. So it's kind of like that's looming in the back of my mind. And then they sat me in a room and basically had a test for me of all these different concepts that I didn't know. Like I remember I never really worked with regex when I, regular expressions, when I was in my boot camp, and they sat me down and they're like, figure out this regex and all these other technical questions. It was honestly like a little mini SAT for web development. And I was like, I walked out of there and I was like, I completely bombed this. Like, because of, I was already under stress because of everything that happened the day before and everything else. And but honestly, and I didn't get that job, which is totally fine. But those are going to happen. But like you said, you learn from them. And now I actually looked into regex after that and was like, okay, here's something I know I need to look into and kind of learn about. And that's kind of what it is when you don't do well at an interview, I still take it as a learning experience because now you're more prepped for future interviews that may ask the same thing.
Oh yeah, most definitely. So when you ended up then, of course, landing this first job, how long did you work there for? And correct me if I'm wrong, but your current role at CrowdStrike, is this like your second tech job after that initial one?
It is. So now that I'm at CrowdStrike, this is my second tech job. I'm working as a UX engineer there. And so my first job, I was a web developer. So we were basically making marketing sites for their different clients. So I was just writing like HTML, CSS, a little bit of JavaScript. Here and there. But I was there for almost 2 years before I switched to my job at CrowdStrike.
Okay, nice. And then what, because you work in UX, so is your role today more like design related or is it more front end or is it kind of a blend of both?
So it's definitely more front end. So kind of the way UX works at CrowdStrike is we have basically our UX team, and that's comprised of course, our managers and our engineers, but we also have writers, researchers, and designers. So we're all working collaboratively on getting the front end for our product up to par with either improving current features or adding new features, fixing bugs, customer issues, things like that.
Nice. So you work, obviously closely with other people, but like designers. And when you say writers, do you mean like a UX copywriter? So someone who writes the copy on like an interface?
Yeah. So there's both UX copywriters on our team. And then we also have technical writers who are writing up the docs for our customers to use.
Yeah, that's really cool. I always thought like UX copywriting was really interesting. I know because it was something I never thought about. Like who writes... Like who, like literally on any website you're on, like, or like think of social, like a Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, it's like, it's someone's job to write and label all the buttons and all the links, like the footer links and the menu items and something. And yeah, it's really interesting. And just the whole idea of user experience in general. So do you take part in like any kind of user research or what the heck is it called? Like the user experience testing and things like that?
Yeah, so we actually at CrowdStrike, and I know it's different at every company, but we have our own researchers who are the ones kind of talking to the customers, doing meetings and saying, here's what we're proposing, or tell us what you don't like about this, tell us what improvements we can make. And they're the ones working with the managers and have the higher ups and figuring out what we're going to work on for the year. But it's really interesting. I never knew that was a thing. Just like with copywriting, I never knew that was a thing. I think if I had known that UX writing was like a real job when I was doing PR, I probably would have transitioned into that because honestly, my writing skills could have really transitioned to it. But it's really neat seeing all of the different kind of functions of UX and what the different things that really go into making a product what it is.
Yeah. And I should have totally asked this like a few questions ago, but what exactly is CrowdStrike? Like what is the product?
Yeah, so CrowdStrike is a cybersecurity company that stops breaches. So basically, we're helping companies keep themselves safe from attacks and various things like that. I have no cybersecurity background. Actually, a lot of us on the UX team don't come in having that cybersecurity background because UX is a specific niche and then cybersecurity is another niche. So to kind of combine those two together to find that in a person is really rare. So a lot of us come in not having that background, but we've learned so much. I've been there for a little over 2 years now. So I've learned a ton about cybersecurity and it's a really interesting thing and something that's just continuing to grow in our society and our world today.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Of course. So with like the part of the product that you're working on, is it for customers of CrowdStrike that are like logging into their admin area or something like that?
It is. So it's our customers are logging onto our user interface and kind of interacting with it. And that's the part that I'm building is that part that they're interacting with various different functions of the product. And I'm working together with our sensor team, who's the one actually making the sensor that's fielding, getting all of this information of different detections and things like that. And then also working with our cloud engineers, who are the ones kind of the middle people between the sensor team and us UX engineers. They're taking what the sensor is getting and then translating it into a way that our UX and our APIs can understand.
Yeah, that's really fascinating, especially because, as you already mentioned, cybersecurity is such a growing field. Do you see yourself like staying with that in the future, like in the realm of cybersecurity?
I think cybersecurity, it's still growing a ton. It's really interesting. I feel like I haven't gotten bored with it in the past 2 years because I'm still learning so much. But I think like ultimately my career goal is to become an engineering manager. I really love helping people in their careers and helping them progress further. And I like the idea of being a manager and kind of seeing the higher picture and kind of helping that and really getting the satisfaction of building up your team and having them be the ones that are really being successful and kind of promoting that. So ultimately, that is where I want my kind of career path to go, is to be more on the manager side of things.
Nice, nice. So I'm switching gears here, but I saw on Twitter that you're the organizer of the Nashville Women Programmers Meetup.
Yes.
Could you tell me more about that and when you started it, or when you started working with them, if it was already established previously?
Yeah. So when I was in my code school, my friend and I, who actually we went to college together and just happened to be at the same code school in the same program, we kind of saw this need for especially women in tech to kind of get together in Nashville. And we had found out about a national program called Tech Ladies, which is still in existence. They're amazing. So we had actually started a local meetup chapter of Tech Ladies, and we're doing that. So that was more for women in all areas of tech, not just developers, focused on kind of building their careers, things like that. So now Tech Ladies is still around. They're an amazing organization. Allison and her team are amazing women who are just supporting other women in tech, but they're more focused on online events now. So we took a break from our individual chapter events, and I was still wanting to help out in town. And Nashville Women Programmers, I've attended their events in the past. They'd been around for several years before I joined, and they were looking for other organizers to help out. So I reached out and started hosting events. And now Lisa, who is the founder of Nashville Women Programmers, actually moved to Chicago. So she had me take over kind of the main point of contact for the group. And now we've been online and virtual for more than a year because of the pandemic, but hopefully we can get together in person soon. But it's been great. Like I said, I really love just helping other women realize that, you know, tech is a career for them. And so any way I can help out, I've always really been drawn towards user meetups, because that's kind of especially how I found out about a lot of jobs and got a lot of leads. And so any way I can kind of contribute back to the community is one that I want to do. And so that's kind of why I was really drawn to Nashville Women Programmers and helping them out.
Yeah. So we actually had Allison from Tech Ladies on the podcast.
Yeah,
a few seasons ago, I believe. We'll link to the episode in the show notes on the website for anyone who's curious to listen to that interview or learn more about them. But yeah, that's really great. And like, how many hours a week or whatnot are you working on the meetup organization? Because I feel like a lot of people like are really interested in doing something like that, you know, wherever they live. But then it's also like, wait, but how much time does it take? How much work is involved? Like what the balance is? How do you kind of go about that?
So the way Nashville Women for Grammars is set up is we have different roles. So it's not just me that's an organizer. We have, I think, around 6 women now that are organizing it. So we have 2 that are focused on getting our speakers. We're a monthly meetup. So they're organizing our speakers every month, getting their topics, arranging that. And they're kind of the point people for that. I'm more so the point person for logistics. And I also host our meetups along with one other woman, Sydney. She also helps host them. So every other month we kind of switch off. So honestly, it's not too much of a commitment, a couple hours every week when you have kind of that team around you. When it was just myself and my friend Stephanie doing Tech Ladies, our local meetup, it was a lot more because it was just us two. So we were trying to go out and find speakers for, we were originally doing monthly and then we switched to quarterly. And then we'd have to figure out locations. Thankfully, especially with the pandemic now, it's been a lot easier to coordinate because everything's online. But Nashville Women Programmers before the pandemic had a sponsorship for to host our meetup every month. So that was nice that we didn't have to organize that. But honestly, when you're doing it all yourself or with one other person, it's a lot to handle. But just knowing that you're kind of giving back to community when you hear about someone finding a job because of someone they met through your meetup, it's an amazing feeling and it makes it all worth it.
Yeah, I'm not savvy in the in-person realm. And I think there was one time I kind of went about trying to organize something in person. It never actually happened. But yeah, it was overwhelming for me because there were like all these things I never thought about, just like, oh, where to have it. And just like stuff like that. I was like, oh man, this is not something I think I'm naturally good at. Like the kind of in-person event coordination. Cause that's really what it is. You're like planning events and
I like
the online world, but I really admire people who can do the in-person planning because it's a, mm-hmm. it's a different beast, I think.
And the funny thing for me is when I would go to meetups, I would be really intimidated because I don't know how to kind of, like I said, I'm an introvert. So initiating that conversation with somebody else was kind of a big thing for me. But when I'm hosting them, it's another world because people come up to you to ask questions. So for me, it was just another way of making networking, honestly, a little bit easier on myself. And with PR, I was always having to do kind of these events and things anyway. So it was really also taking that into it and kind of making it, honestly, networking a little bit easier on myself, I think.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. Well, unfortunately, we're like basically out of time, but I wanted to ask you one final question just to help the folks that are listening. And that's just if there's any advice that you can leave listeners with about transitioning into tech, especially if they don't have a technical college degree or background, so on and so forth.
My biggest piece of advice would be just to have that confidence in yourself that you can do it. It may take a while. You may apply to 100 or something jobs, but you can do it. You can take, even if you come from the strangest career path, like I would never believe that ballet and music publicity have something to do with the tech world, but take a step back and kind of find those comparisons and show these people that you're talking to and interviewing with that, you know, you are junior today, but in a few years you're going to be senior and you're going to be mentoring their juniors and really helping to build up their company.
Awesome. Well, thank you again, Kara, for coming on the show. Where can people find you online?
Yeah, so you can find me on Twitter. My username is Kara Luton, so K-A-R-A-L-U-T-O-N. And then you can also find me on my website, karaluton.com.
Perfect. Thank you again.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. This was great.
Thanks for listening today. If you missed anything or would like a recap, you can find the show notes at learntocodewith.me/podcast. If you're listening to this episode in the future, simply click the search icon in the upper navigation and search for the guest's name. If you enjoyed this episode and are interested in learning how to code, there's no better time to start than right now. To help you out, we have a free downloadable resource with our 10 learning strategies for new coders. It's perfect for beginners, no matter your experience or background, and you can download your free copy at learntocodewith.me. It was great to have you with me on the Learn to Code with Me podcast today. I'll see you next time.